From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Another incident involving a U.S. Navy vessel and Iran. Iran's Navy warned a U.S. ship to leave the area where it was holding a military drill. Iran Naval Commander Rear Admiral Habibullah Sayari said the American vessel left the area immediately after being warned. The commander said the U.S. warship had entered the area to gather information on Iranian forces during the drills. A U.S. fighter jet had also received a similar warning from the Iranians and left the area. Iran is conducting naval maneuvers in the Sea of Oman and the northern part of the Indian Ocean. According to Iranian media reports, the drills will last until January 31st. Press TV's Amir Mahdi Kazemi has more.
Today, marked the first day of the tactical phase of the Navy drill, codenamed Velayat 94, in which different units of the Iranian Navy took part in a large drill that covers an area nearly triple the size of Iran, stretching from the east of the Strait of Hormuz to the north of the Oman Sea, and also in international waters from the north of the Indian Ocean all the way down to the 10-degree latitude, which is in the middle of international waters in the Indian Ocean. And these different units started to practice. They were dispatched to certain areas that were destined and pre-planned, and by tomorrow they're going to launch a series of war games in order to practice their preparedness in order to confront the real situations, both in offense and defense. Now, what happened earlier this morning, according to the commander of the Iranian Navy, Rear Admiral Habibullah Sayari, a U.S. Navy vessel, along with an aircraft that was escorting it, got near the drill zone, and it was it received warnings by the Iranian Navy aircraft, and they were directed outside the war game zone. What happened was that the Iranian Navy says that perhaps the U.S. aircraft was there to collect some information regarding what was going on in the Iranian Navy drill, and it received direct and serious warnings by the Iranian aircraft, and at the same time, after a few seconds, it left the area. That was regarding the incident. Right now, we are expecting more to come by tomorrow, when the drill will be entering a new phase, and submarine units, as well as some vessels, and as well as the commandos of the Iranian Navy, will be conducting different operations in different parts of this zone, which currently is commanded in the in an area called Konarak. It's situated in the northern coast of the Oman Sea in the southern Iran, the Sistan Baluchistan province at the moment.
At least 8 of the militia members who had been occupying the Oregon Wildlife Refuge for nearly a month were taken into custody by federal authorities Tuesday. The arrests followed a brief highway shootout that left one of the protesters dead and its leader, Amon Bundy, and 7 others arrested. Tensions remained high as some of the group continued to occupy the refuge, facing off against state and local authorities. An Oregon journalist told RT Tuesday that at least 12 people remained at the compound.
So as I understand it right now, there are still people at the refuge, in the buildings there, based on the number of people who were there and people have left and come on. But it's at least 12, maybe even as many as 30. And the people there, they're obviously aware of what's going on. And so they have said that they are ready to defend, a peaceful resolution, whatever that means.
According to the New York Times late Tuesday, police erected roadblocks around the Federal Wildlife Refuge. Authorities did not identify the man who was killed, but a member of the Nevada State Assembly, Michelle Fiore, a supporter of the Bundy family, said on Twitter that it was Lavoie Finicum. His daughter, according to the Times, confirmed that to news organizations. Finicum had become a de facto spokesperson for the group.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, sadly, 2016 has begun much like 2015 ended with unacceptable levels of violence and a polarized public discourse across the spectrum in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territory.
That was UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon as he opened a session of the Security Council Tuesday to address the situation in Palestine. We'll have more on that later in this newscast. This past Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that all juvenile lifers across the country must be resentenced. The majority opinion in the case of Montgomery v. Louisiana, authored by Justice Anthony Kennedy, held that the standard established under a previous court decision, Miller v. Alabama, in which the court held that mandatory sentences of life without the possibility of parole are unconstitutional for juvenile offenders, applies retroactively. The petitioner in Montgomery v. Louisiana, Henry Montgomery, has been in prison since 1963 for a murder he committed at the age of 17. The court said that states could undertake resentencing or offer parole to inmates sentenced to life as minors. Up to 2,300 cases nationwide could be affected by the ruling, with over 550 juvenile lifers affected in Pennsylvania alone. A few hours after Monday's ruling, Kerry Shakabuna Marshall, a prison radio correspondent and editor of the magazine The Movement, who was sentenced to life without parole at the age of 17 and has since spent over 25 years in prison, he spoke with Prison Radio's Noel Hanrahan.
All the juvenile or child lifers within the state of Pennsylvania, over 500 of them, and thousands more across the country, is going to be elated to know that they may get a second chance of being released back into society again.
What does it mean for you personally?
I get a chance to return to society as well and show people that I'm not the animal that they was portraying me to be, not the criminal that they was portraying me to be, and that I am a productive person in society and a good person as well.
What's it going to mean to your mom?
One of the things that she always wanted was to see me once again before she passed away.
It's a long way from here to there.
Pennsylvania, they really don't want to carry out the spirit of the Miller decision. They want child lifers to die in prison.
The UN Security Council met Tuesday in yet another attempt to resolve the Palestinian situation. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon opened the session, expressing both his frustration over the failure to make progress during his term in office and his concern that the window could be closing on the possibility of a two-state solution.
Mr. President, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, Palestinian frustration is growing under the weight of a half century of occupation and the paralysis of the peace process. Some have taken me to task for pointing out this indisputable truth. Yet, as oppressed peoples have demonstrated throughout the ages, it is a human nature to react to occupation, which often serves as a potent incubator of hate and extremism. So-called facts on the ground in the occupied West Bank are steadily chipping away the viability of a Palestinian state and the ability of Palestinian people to live in dignity. In an effort to overcome the political impasse, Quartet envoys met Israeli and Palestinian officials on 17 December last year. They reiterated the urgent need for significant steps in line with previous agreements to strengthen Palestinian institutions, security and economic prospects while addressing Israel's security concerns. Changing Israeli policies is essential to advancing this goal, particularly in Israeli-controlled Area C, which comprises 61% of West Bank territory and is home to some 300,000 Palestinians. Approvals of master plans for Palestinian sectors of Area C would allow for much-needed growth in these areas and prevent demolitions. Mr. President, Excellencies, progress towards peace requires a freeze of Israel's settlement enterprise. Continued settlement activities are an affront to the Palestinian people and to the international community. They rightly raise fundamental questions about Israel's commitment to a two-state solution. I'm deeply troubled by reports today that the Israeli government has approved plans for over 150 new homes in illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. This is combined with its announcement last week declaring 370 acres in the West Bank, south of Jericho, and so-called state land. These provocative acts are bound to increase the growth of settler populations, further heighten tensions, and undermine any prospects for a political road ahead. I urge the Israeli government not to use a recent decision by the Israeli High Court affirming a large tract of land south of Bethlehem as a state land to advance settlement activities. The demolitions of Palestinian homes in Area C of the occupied West Bank continue. So do the decade-long difficulties of Palestinians to obtain building permits. The Bedouin community, in particular, is paying a heavy price. I reiterate the UN's call for an immediate end to Israeli plans to forcibly transfer Bedouin communities currently living within the occupied Palestinian territory in the Jerusalem area. At the same time, the humanitarian situation in Gaza remains perilous. 18 months after the end of hostilities, conditions have not significantly improved. I condemn the continuing rocket fire into Israel from militant groups in Gaza. Chronic security and governance challenges and funding shortages have slowed the pace of reconstruction. Much work remains to be done. Meanwhile, the people of Gaza face a dire unemployment, water, and electricity needs. Meeting these concerns must be a top priority. However, none of this can be accomplished without critical support from donors, the fulfillment of pledges from the Cairo Conference, as well as the full return of the Palestinian Authority to Gaza. I continue to strongly believe that conditions in Gaza pose a severe threat to long-term peace and security in the region. Mr. President, Excellencies, Palestinians must also demonstrate commitment to addressing the divisions among Palestinians themselves. I strongly urge the Palestinian factions to advance genuine Palestinian unity on the basis of democracy and the PLO principles. Reconciliation is critical in order to reunite the West Bank and Gaza under a single legitimate Palestinian authority. Healing Palestinian divisions is also critical so that Palestinians can instead focus their energies on establishing a stable state as part of a negotiated two-state solution. Genuine unity will also improve the Palestinian government's ability to meet pressing economic problems, which are adding to the frustration and anger driving Palestinian violence. And as we continue to uphold the right of Palestinians to self-determination, let us be equally firm that incitement has no place and that questioning the right of Israel to exist cannot be tolerated. Mr. President, Excellencies, in an already tense regional environment, it is imperative to promote and consolidate stability wherever possible. In Lebanon, I urge all political leaders to work with Prime Minister Tamim Salam and to intensify efforts to resolve the presidential crisis. The Syria Donor Conference on 4 February in London will be an important opportunity to mobilize support. This must include meeting neighboring countries' huge humanitarian, infrastructure, and stabilization needs in light of the refugee crisis. We are all aware of the strains of Lebanon, Jordan, and Turkey. I welcome the resumption of calm along the Blue Line and in UNIFIL's area of operations following the serious incidents of 20 December and 4 January. All parties have a responsibility to uphold the cessation of hostilities and to ensure full respect of Security Council Resolution 1701. On the Golan, it remains critical that parties to the disengagement agreement maintain liaison with UNDOF. They must refrain from actions that could escalate the situation across the ceasefire line. Mr. President, some may say the current volatility across the region makes it too risky to seek peace. I say the greater peril is not seeking a solution to the Palestinian question. Some say the two sides are entrenched in their respective positions. I say that we must not succumb to passivity, resignation, or hopelessness, that the comprehensive resolution of the conflict is not achievable. A lasting agreement will require difficult compromises by both the Israeli and Palestinian leaders. Yes, but what are the alternatives? The continuing deadly wave of terror attacks and killings, the possible financial collapse of the Palestinian government, ever greater isolation of the Israeli government, a further deterioration of humanitarian conditions in Gaza, and the agonizing build-up to another terrible war, a hollowing of the moral foundation of both Israeli and Palestinian societies alike, a creeping moral blindness that ignores the suffering and indeed the humanity of one's neighbor, more unilateral acts by each side intentionally designed to preempt negotiations and provoke the other side. The parties must act and act now to prevent the two-state solution from slipping away forever. Unfolding and implementing this vision, two states living side by side in peace and security, offers the only means by which Israel could retain both its Jewish majority and democratic status. As the wider Middle East continues to be gripped by a relentless wave of extremist terror, Israelis and Palestinians have an opportunity to restore hope to a region torn apart by intolerance and cruelty. I urge them to accept this historic challenge in the mutual interest of peace. The support of regional partners in this pursuit is essential. The Arab Peace Initiative provides a valuable basis for broader support. And finally, the whole international community must be ever more committed to actively help Palestinians and Israelis to rebuild trust and achieve an enduring peace before it is too late.
Ambassador Riyad Mansour, permanent representative of the State of Palestine to the UN, spoke with journalists outside the council chambers Tuesday.
I just want to say that all members of the Security Council, the Secretary General before that, have concluded their statement in this very important ministerial meeting. We listened very carefully to all these statements. We listened very carefully to what the Secretary General has stated. And we are continuing to listen to this debate, which is a very long debate. We are grateful for the participation of many ministers, headed by the President of the Council, the Foreign Minister of Uruguay, as well as the special participation of the Foreign Minister of Senegal. Senegal is the chair of the Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People for the last 40 years. This is very special. What is really became very clear in the statement of the Secretary General and all members of the Security Council, that all of them acknowledge that settlement as illegal and illegitimate is the main obstacle to the resumption of any meaningful political process that would lead to the end of occupation the independence of the state of Palestine and therefore the preservation of the two-state solution. Of course, the question before all members of the council, if you have this unanimous position and you acknowledge that it is illegal, illegitimate, and an obstacle to peace, then what is required from the Security Council is to take steps to remove this major obstacle in order to open doors. Other ideas that also were mentioned by more than one participant is the need of international protection and the need of the Security Council members to begin the discussion on that issue. Egypt will be taking the lead in this regard, and we hope that the Security Council members would use the report or the study that the legal department in the at the United Nations send to the Security Council, not to leave it on the shelves, but also to use it as part of this discussion. Another important idea was mentioned by more than one party is a collective approach, a new process to deal with the situation of the political process. Some refer to it as an international conference. Others refer to a support group similar to what happened with regard to the 5+1 on the Iranian file and the support group on the Syrian agenda, and you know the meetings in Vienna 1, Vienna 2, and the meeting that will take place in Geneva that was called for by Mr. De Mistura on Friday. On Friday, the meeting will start in Geneva. So these important elements and other elements are serious ideas for trying to break the stalemate in the situation in the occupied territory, because almost everyone said that the status quo is unsustainable and we should not accept the continuation of the same situation. On the contrary, this will lead to the more of an explosive situation. Let me just conclude by just only one comment about the one isolated delegation around the table trying to convince everyone in the Security Council and the international community that the victims, the Palestinian people, are those who are responsible for the crimes committed by the victimizer, the occupying power against them. This exercise in futility has been tried by all occupiers, all colonizer, against you know the people that they colonize and victimize. They always blame them for their crimes and their activities. He omitted for his own convenient reason not to show the difference between Israel as an occupying power and other countries by omitting to refer to Israel as an occupying power. I think all those who were observing and still following this debate will come to the conclusion that the representative of the occupying power, who is a promoter of settlement activities, and who his speech is a speech for promoting his maybe personal agenda for some future political position in Israel, of condoning settlement activities, supporting it, and letting it get away with murder, is the motive perhaps for him continuing to advance this isolated position. And we are happy that not a single taker was found among the members of the Security Council. Again, all colonizers, occupiers try to blame the victim, blame the children, blame the Palestinian civilian population, blame the women, blame the prisoners, blame all of them for all the crimes committed by Israel, the occupying power, and we are delighted that the Security Council and the international community is not supporting this position, and the representative of the occupying authority will continue to be isolated, alone in this position, because nobody would support a violator of international law, and nobody would support the continuation of settlement activities in the occupied territory. Of course, for us, we will study all these things, and we will conclude from it what need to be concluded. Hopefully that the Security Council will have a political will to translate its position into practical steps, as we have called for in our statement. We called for action, and action now, and not to be delayed. Yes.
Ambassador, on that, there have been reports from Ramallah based on Palestinian sources, unnamed sources, that you are planning to present soon a resolution on the legality of the occupation. Is that in the offing? When are you going to do it? Is it going to happen soon? And is that correct that it's going to be on the occupation rather than on protection, which you have stressed in the past?
Well, there are discussions, in Ramallah among the leadership, and also discussions with members of the Security Council. And I'm continuing with the meetings with members of the Security Council, all of them, in order really to assess and gauge the mood in the Security Council and the readiness of the Council of taking steps in the year 2016 that will help to remove major obstacles from the path of opening doors for a meaningful political process. In this regard, as I said, that the discussion was clear in terms of concentrating on settlement activities as being illegal, illegitimate, and major obstacle to peace. The question, of course, is the willingness and readiness of the Security Council to translate that into concrete action. With regard to settlement activities, this file will remain active. We will continue pushing members of the Security Council to begin the discussion. We believe that the discussion will begin, and we hope that that discussion will be concluded with some practical steps. We will follow also the discussion on protection with the Secretariat, with the SG himself, because the Secretariat and the Secretary General can do many things in this regard, and we are very active in discussing all these issues with the SG. Well, there are things that can be done by the Secretary General and his team. It has been the case in the past. The Security Council has also a role to play, and there has also been positions, resolutions adopted calling for protection, 605 and 904, and the TIFF, which is a group of mainly Scandinavian individuals who are providing some form of protection in Al-Khalil. So these are before us, and also the General Assembly has also the capability and the power to do so. And the first peacekeeping force that was established in our region was established by the General Assembly, and it is still in place, open-ended mandate. They are composed of about 500 of them, and they are at the disposal of the Secretary General, and they are funded by money from the budget of the Secretariat. So we are looking at all these examples. In addition to the legal track, whether through the Fourth Geneva Convention High Contracting Parties or the ICC, all of them can play a role in terms of providing protection through fighting impunity and seeking, justice and accountability. So all these elements are under studies and evaluation by our leadership as we are fine-tuning the final elements of adopting the strategy for 2016 on the international arena. Thank you very much.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.